The ESPN College Football Podcast is presented by Allstate. Save money like a champion with Allstate. Visit allstate.com or call an agent for a quote today. Championship savings for the win.
Is it a touchdown? Yes!
The ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Booger McFarland and Kevin Agande.
It is Wednesday. Good morning to you. Kevin Agande here, the ESPN College Football Podcast. Booger McFarland will join us. I cannot believe, Taylor, it is December 1st. And the only way I know is we had to pull out the elf from the shelf last night and try to find out a place to put our little peppermint sticks around. And then our three kids woke up and then, boom, they're ready to go at 6:30. Nothing motivates them than having an elf in the house. I wish we could use that for the rest of the school year because usually it's tough waking them up. Booger is going to join us. Phenomenal stuff, especially his thoughts about Brian Kelly. And we're going to get two versions from Booger. We're going to get the general college football analyst version on the hire, and we're going to get the LSU Booger McFarland version on the hire. Pretty interesting as we also break down some of the games from championship weekend. Before we talk to Booger, two things I want to mention. First, watch NBA Today, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN and the ESPN app, or listen to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, check out my guy, Adrian Wojnarowski, on the Woj Pod. He's talking to the biggest names in the NBA every week. That's the Woj Pod. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Time now for Booger McFarland and a breakdown on the coaching carousel, which feels weird to say, but that's what's going on right now, as well as what to look forward to in the keys of the games this weekend. Well, well, well. The last 3 days have been pretty incredible. And if you're a college football fan or a follower, a lot of questions. We've got some answers, but a lot of questions on what it means. What's the future like? I can't recall a span of 24 to 48 hours quite like what we experienced on Sunday and Monday with Lincoln Riley going to USC and then Brian Kelly going to LSU. Booger, I want to get two perspectives here. I want to get the LSU version of Booger McFarland on this hire, and then I want to get the general opinion from Booger McFarland on this hire. So which one do you want first? Do you want to go LSU version or do you want to give me the general version?
Well, I think the general version is like this. When you look at the landscape of college football, and we've talked about it, if you go back to last week's podcast, there are certain schools in the country, Kev, that have an inherent advantage on other schools based on their location and based on the number of athletes that are grown in those areas. LSU is one of those schools. And I think if we're looking at the general question of why would a coach at Notre Dame, one of the most prestigious universities in America, that they are revered, if for no other reason than they think they're kind of better than everyone else with the golden helmets and the flakes and all that good stuff and the luck of the Irish and touchdown Jesus. I can go on and on. Why would a coach leave there to go to any other school? I think Brian Kelly is a Hall of Fame type coach who looked up in the mirror one day and said, I'm 11-1 again, and I'm not guaranteed a playoff spot. As a matter of fact, it's highly unlikely unless Bama loses, unless Cincinnati loses, unless Oklahoma State loses and or Michigan, that I'm going to get in the playoff. So what else can I do? Notre Dame, the institution, does not want to be a part of a conference. We've already seen that. So we're going to be kind of on the outside on our pedestal with our NBC money for a long time. I've done everything I can. He's the winningest coach in college football, winningest coach at Notre Dame. And so I think in general, he made a decision that says, you know what? I want to go and find a new challenge at the age of 60. And nobody ever saw it coming. I think it's very akin to what Nick Saban did when Nick Saban came back to college football at 57. He went to a place where he thought he could take to a new level. And I think Brian Kelly is doing the same. And then on top of that, Kev, here's the icing on the cake with three or four cherries. They gave him $100 million. Mm. Okay? Like when all else fails, here's a simple rule of thumb. If a company or a business or, I don't care, it could be a stripper. It doesn't matter. If they want to give you $100 million, Kev, you go. You figure out everything else after that. It doesn't matter what company. It could be the Russian strip club federations. If they say, Kevin Negandhi, hey, we want you to come to Russia and we want you to organize and run the strip joint. We're going to give you $100 million. You know what you say, Kev? Hey, Monica, we're moving to Russia. You can bring the kids or y'all can come visit, but I'm going to get this $100 million. So when all else fails, Kev, here's a rule of thumb in life. Take the $100 million and figure out everything else later. So general rule, yeah, that's what he did. Now, the LSU version is this.
I just want to say there are many ways to go on this podcast. I never thought that I would be contemplating my life in Russia, leading a strip club and having a conversation with my wife and family about it. But continue. That's how crazy the last week has been. So now you've given me the general version.
Yes.
Okay. Now I want to hear the LSU booger. Your thoughts on this hire.
It's really simple, Kev. LSU, I think, recruits itself. Those kids grew up in the state wanting to go to LSU. Most of them, some of them leave, but most of them want to go there. The last three coaches that coached at LSU has won a national championship. Some coaches think that two of them can't coach. Now you figure out which one of those two, who they are. And I think Brian Kelly simply said this. Hey, I can outcoach those two guys. So I'm coming, okay? I like Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly is buttoned up. Brian Kelly is everything that Coach O is not. And I love Coach O. I stomp for Coach O to get the job. But he's everything that Coach O is not. He's buttoned up. He's going to stand in front of the podium, and you don't ever have to worry about anything he says. He is going to represent LSU to the fullest, and he's an XO coach. Coach O was a CEO guy, all right? He was Bobby Bowden, get on top of the little ladder and look around and see the practice field. Coach Brian Kelly is hands-on. He's an offensive guy. He builds big, physical, offensive lines. He wins, Kev. He wins generally 10, 11 games a year. I want consistency at LSU. I'm tired of winning the national title and then being down for 2 or 3 years. Yeah, it's cool to win national championships, but I want consistency, and I think Brian Kelly brings consistency from an administration standpoint. He brings consistency from a football standpoint. He is a football coach. He is a hard ass. He understands how to get 17 to 21 year olds in line, because I think there's been a point in time where the kids thought they were running the program. No. Yeah, you are part of the program, but make no mistake, this is my program and we're going to win and we're going to do it a certain way. And so I love the hire. Can't say he was my first choice. I'll honestly admit that he
was not my first choice.
Well, Kev, I liked it. I liked the idea of bringing Mel Tucker. But when Mel Tucker took the $100 million, go back to the general rule, Kev, when they offer you $100 million, you take the $100 million and you figure the rest out later.
Yeah, so, we're going to also state that it's the details are $10.95 million, but all the incentives, you're going past the $100 million. I got it. Go.
Big guy. When you, if it's 97, I'm going to round up. Okay. That's the way I look at it.
95. We're still rounding up.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So yeah, I liked it Mel, but once Mel decided to go and stay with Michigan State, I think BK is a phenomenal fit. To me, he's an 8.5, 9 out of 10. As far as everything that LSU wants, the only question that people continue to bring up, does he fit? Can he fit in the South? Let me remind you of this. When Nick Saban came to Baton Rouge, you know where he came from? Up north, Michigan State, Kent State, wherever he was. He had never had gumbo, okay? Mm-hmm. So don't talk to me about fitting in the South. You know what fits in the South, Kev? It's called winning. You know what fits in the South, Kev? It's called kicking Alabama's ass. That's what fits in the South. You know what wins? Hey, playing good, tough, physical football, which is what the one thing you and I always talk about. What has Notre Dame been known for, Kev? Okay? Being able to run the football, smart quarterback, physical. They just struggle because they couldn't get the high-end skill guys on offense and the high-end guys on the back seven on defense. You'll be able to get that in Baton Rouge. So, yeah, Kev, I'm giddy because I think our program now is on the level with a coach that is on level with Dabo. He's on level with Saban. He's on the level. Now, he doesn't have all the pellets on the wall, but he's on the level with the upper echelon guys of what they've accomplished in the business. And yeah, he took the $100 million. So again, rule of thumb, if you guys out there don't remember anything else I'm saying, I don't care what company calls you. It could be in China and they want you to stand on the corner and pose nude with a sign that says, hey, I'm being paid $100 million to stand here. You take the job, you get the $100 million, and then you come back and you go through rehab. We're in America. We're a forgiving country. We will forgive you, Kevin Negandhi, for running a strip club in Russia. But you know what we're not going to forgive you of? Is being broke, buddy.
I appreciate that. I'm not sure my wife would forgive me, but she'll see that the check's clearing. That's
Listen,
it, right?
I know Monica. I've seen her taste. She likes red bottoms. She likes Christian Louis Vuitton. She likes Fendi and Prada. She likes driving BMWs. So, yeah, somehow, some way, she'll forgive you of running the strip club.
Here's the thing. And let's get back to the college football scene here. And what you're talking about is capitalism. I don't think bottom line, you know, I think people are upset about the breakup. In any breakup, it's never a good time. No matter what it is, no matter how you do it, it's never a good time, right? And secondly, your point is this. If somebody's giving you the money, you don't fault the person who takes the money. Because, you know, many years ago when everybody was mad at A-Rod for taking that, you know, $300 million contract, whatever it was with the Rangers, and I was like, no, there's somebody that's paying him. No matter what, if somebody's paying him, how can you fault somebody from saying yes? And I think that the system is where the big question is, because we are trending. When you talk about the money that's being handed out to these college football coaches, it's the system that I'm concerned about more than anything else. But people have the money. There's no doubt about it. And you're not going to fault anybody for saying it. You're not going to fault Lincoln Riley for saying yes, right, to go to USC.
Completely agree. Let me ask you this, Kev, because I've seen it on social media about how Brian Kelly did it and he's wrong and all that. Based on what we know, Brian Kelly was on the West Coast recruiting. The deal got consummated. And, of course, everything in America breaks on social media. So it breaks on social media. He's going to meet with his team the next day. People are like, you know, I guess Notre Dame has this group text where the coach can text all the players at once. Oh, some app, I've never seen it. But he texted players and apologized. And everybody's like, man, he broke up through text. Okay, what did you want him to do? Get on a 120-person Zoom from the West Coast? So let me ask you this, Kev, based on the current climate in college football and how the schedule works, is there anything else that Brian Kelly or Lincoln Riley could have done? And let's focus on BK because he sent the text message. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that BK could have done where you would have said, hey, he did that the right way?
No, there's no right way because the one thing, the only issue with Brian Kelly right now is the timing of when he did it, just because Notre Dame's opportunity is still there for the playoff, right? But if you poll some of the Notre Dame players, and I think that they spoke out on Monday night on a podcast, Hamilton and a couple other guys saying, hey, we support him, but you know, the business is business, right? He's doing what he's got to do. That to me shows that the players are fully aware of the business. I think it changes too in the last year to the attitude, because there is NIL and then we've seen the transfer portal. If players didn't have a transfer portal, I wouldn't blame any single player for being ticked off because you are leaving them while players cannot leave, right? If there was no NIL, and I'm not comparing the opportunity of making a, you know, four figures to making, you know, potentially nine figures. I'm not, but there are opportunities there for players. I think the question is that with Lincoln Riley losing, because if Lincoln Riley doesn't lose at Bedlam, they don't lose by 4 points. He doesn't get the USC. I don't think he takes the USC job because they're still in the playoff conversation if they win the Big 12 championship against Oklahoma State. Right, Book? Don't you agree? Like, I think that's the question here. Do we see things differently if Notre Dame, you know, suffered a second loss and they weren't in the playoff conversation? That's where it gets.
So
at least this week,
I'm on the other side of saying this. Let's just say that, let's say the Oklahoma wins Bedlam. So now Oklahoma goes to the Big 12 championship game. And let's just say that in that Big 12 championship game, Oklahoma wins. Oklahoma's probably in the playoff, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Between this Saturday and the playoff game is a month. I still think that because Lincoln Riley has been in this situation before, because they haven't won it, I still think Lincoln Riley takes the job.
But Boog, but I get that. Yeah, okay, if you think he takes the job, but Boog, that is like a star player saying, "I'm going to the transfer portal because I'm going to win somewhere else. I'm leaving right now." Like it's even bigger than that. Like that's the star quarterbacks. Caleb Williams, they win. He's like, you know what? I've seen what we can do against these teams in the past with Lincoln Riley. I'm going to go in the trend. People would have lost their minds if Lincoln Riley would have left and they were in the playoff. I think that's the elephant in the room that everybody's discussing and pointing to, that Notre Dame still has a chance to make the playoff, and they won't even have the coach there that led this team. And then it gets a little bit like how he left, the timing of Eli. Again, back to what we talked about in the beginning of this issue. No good breakups in the history of man exist. No matter what, there are no good breakups.
Well, I'll push back on that. When Scott Frost left UCF and went to Nebraska, that was pretty amicable. I mean, he coached the bowl game and then he left, right?
But there were UCF fans that probably didn't want him to leave. And like you're suggesting that Brian Kelly should have taken the job, but then does he still stay while still to see if they can make the playoff, right? Like
I think what they did, both Brian Kelly and Lincoln Riley made a long-term decision. They're willing to sacrifice short-term. So they're willing to sacrifice a year of getting into the playoff. Hey, do we think we can make the playoff? Maybe. Can we beat Georgia? Probably not. So, yeah, I'm going to sacrifice the now, but what I'm going to get is the long term. Okay,
I'm going to get. No, totally agree with you. I'm saying the optics of it.
It looks bad, but you know what looks better than the optics, Kev? $100 million. It looks a lot better.
Yeah, it does. It does. But again, like from the outside, people railing on BK a lot more than Lincoln Riley, just because Notre Dame's opportunity is still open there to make the playoff. And is it the whole point, you know, playoff opportunity all season long? We talk about making the playoff, and if the Notre Dame players are okay with it, then we move on. And I brought that up, that some of the Notre Dame players are okay with it. They understand it's a business. Now, let's just actually advance this, because then it gets a little more tricky when we talk about the playoff and you look at the short list of candidates for Notre Dame. And one of them, potentially, he's got a championship game this weekend and they could win and beat Houston, and Luke Fickell standing there as the head coach of Cincinnati in the playoff. And what do you do? I mean, do you suggest that he takes the opportunity because it's long-term over short-term? He can't leave Cincinnati, not when they're getting ready for the playoff, right?
See, that's a different situation, because Cincinnati is generally not in this position. Yeah, they played in the New Year's Six Bowl last year, but generally speaking, their history hasn't said, hey, we've been here and we're going to continue to get here. Again, it's a little different. I think, let's just play this out. I think there are two people in play for Notre Dame, and only two. I think Luke Fickell, Matt Campbell. I think those are the two people in play. You'll hear Marcus Freeman, who is the Notre Dame defensive coordinator. My gut feeling is great young coach, superstar in the waiting, not there yet. Or either he's not there, or the perception of him is that he's not there. I think he's a superstar. And he's eventually going to be a head coach. I don't think Notre Dame gives him that job, long story short. So Matt Campbell, Luke Fickell. Luke Fickell gets the job. Does Luke Fickell go to the AD, Jack Swarbrick, and do they say, hey, Cincinnati's in the playoff, I want to see this through. I'm on record as I want the job at Notre Dame. And does Jack say, okay, we'll wait. You finish that, and the day after, whenever you get eliminated, I'll name you the head coach. Do they work that deal out? I think we'll know that publicly. If Notre Dame goes 2 or 3 weeks with no head coach, we'll know who the coach is. Here's based on that scenario.
Boog, I get you. I that is ideal, right? You know when that was ideal? Probably 3 or 4 years ago, with Swarbrick saying that because of the signing day being February. But this early signing period changes everything. This is why we've seen these coaches make these moves as quickly as possible to get inside that.
Right.
These programs make these firings because they understand that December signing period is now much bigger than February. And you've got to jump the gun, because if you don't, you lose a year. And so, that's why it gets complicated here, right, with Luke Fickell.
Correct. That is a great point. And I think there's only 4 or 5 schools in the country that can say what I'm about to say right now. We sell Notre Dame, all right, regardless of who the coach is, okay? Stanford can say that. Notre Dame can say that. Help me out here if I'm missing. Schools that can say our institution is so big and our institution we think is so powerful and a degree and going to this institution means so much that we're going to get a great coach. It doesn't matter who the coach is because you are going to Notre Dame. And it means something. You are going to Stanford and it means something. You are going to school X. Okay. It means something. I think Notre Dame could possibly feel that way. Now, I know some schools can't say that because most players want to know, but I got to think, Kev, let's just take a look. And maybe Taylor can look at this in the meantime. How many guys have decommitted from Notre Dame in the last 2 days? I haven't seen any decommit.
I haven't seen it. No, I've seen Oklahoma, but I haven't seen Notre Dame.
It's been a mass exodus at Oklahoma.
Yes.
How many guys decommitted from LSU? I only saw one. I haven't seen zero at Notre Dame. So, Kev, my whole point, and LSU's been without a coach for 7 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So some institutions, Kev, and it's all subject, some institutions can sell themselves. I think Notre Dame can sell that as a possibility. Now, if Matt Campbell gets the job, I think Matt Campbell will be named in the next week. If they wait any longer, then you can bet your bottom dollar it's Luke Fickell.
Them waiting the way they've waited so far makes me think it's Luke Fickell, right? I mean, like, again, it's been 24 hours since, you know, obviously.
That seems like forever.
Yeah, right? In this day and age, maybe it's 36 hours because it happened Monday night and we're taping this Wednesday morning. But, like, it does feel like forever. And then here's the other thing. Matt Campbell, I'm surprised Oklahoma hasn't made an announcement with Matt Campbell. And I'm not saying that I have an insider. Yeah. I'm just saying it just makes sense that they make that connection with Matt. You're shaking your head, but I bring up his ties already to Big 12. He understands how to recruit and where to recruit. Mark Stoops just got a big deal at Kentucky, so they're not going to go with the family right there. I would think that would have been a really nice hire if Oklahoma brought in Mark Stoops. So your hesitancy of Matt Campbell going to Oklahoma?
Yeah, because I think if Matt Campbell goes to Oklahoma, then they go away from what they've been known for, which is the offensive brand of football. Matt Campbell is, I get it, with Brock Purdy and Breece Hall, what they've done. But the offense hasn't exactly been, hey, we're going to light the world on fire. Now, no, better athletes, right, et cetera. Does Josh Heupel make sense? Same type of offense, open spread. He played at Oklahoma. I think he won a Heisman at Oklahoma, didn't
he? Don't forget, Boog, though, he was fired as the OC from the same AD at Oklahoma. So that.
Interesting.
That plays a role in relationships. I don't know if that relationship is still frosty. I don't know how that is behind the scenes, but don't forget he got fired there.
Okay. So if we're going to do that game, let's say he got fired. Stoops is already re-upped at Kentucky. Let's say that they don't want to go with the rugged brand of football of Matt Campbell. I'll throw another name out there because I know that this guy deserves a bigger platform. You ready? I'm going to watch your facial expression. Lane Kiffin, Oklahoma, in the Big 12, coming to the SEC in a couple of years. So he'd still be in the same conference. We know how much he's enamored with being in the same league as Nick Saban. So he would still get that. But he would get the benefit of being and able to recruit Texas instead of recruiting Mississippi. Lane Kiffin, Oklahoma.
I actually like it. I like it just because of two things. The guy can recruit no matter what. Oklahoma has done a phenomenal job in recruiting in that entire Oklahoma and Texas area. And you just brought up one specific thing, offensive mind. Right.
Yeah.
You're losing Lincoln Riley, who's a phenomenal offensive mind. You bring in another guy who you don't miss a beat. You don't miss a beat with Lane, with Lane. That is just when you look at Lane's track record.
OK,
that's the question. Where is Lane? And I'm not saying Lane hasn't learned and matured in the process of where he was from Tennessee to Florida Atlantic to Ole Miss. We have seen some maturity.
Yeah,
you're leaving the Bob Stoops, Lincoln Riley, you know, stability mentality. You bring in Lane, you've got to see that. Are we bringing in somebody that's going to make sure we are stable? Because I like the name. I like the fit. I like the whole concept of offense and recruiting. All of that makes sense.
Yeah.
But you're also bringing in a CEO of a program that is completely different from Ole Miss. completely different from Florida Atlantic. You know,
here's what I'll say, Kev. In the SEC, in the SEC West, he took Ole Miss to 10 wins, and they're going to be in a New Year's Six.
Incredible. Bowl. First time they won 10 games in the regular season. Yes.
That tells me a lot, Kev. That tells me a lot. Because when you can do it in that league and do it at the level in which he did it, to me, that tells me a lot. So, yeah, I think Lane is at a level right now in his career, or he's at a point in his life where, you know, Kev, we all get to a point where when we're younger, we did dumb stuff. You used to have a couple hoop ear rings. I'm not sure why you got those. I've never had hoop ear rings, but I did a bunch of dumb stuff when I was young.
Yeah, short and sleeve suits. We short, get that.
Short sleeve suits. When I was 16, I snuck in my girlfriend's window and almost got arrested. Like we do dumb stuff.
Dumb stuff.
Okay. Yep. At a certain point in life, you reach an age where maturity starts to set in, where you realize I have to grow up and be better and do better, if not for me, for the people that look up to me. Okay. And I think Lane's at a point in his life where he started that because people are counting on him. And there's nothing like responsibility to make you mature a lot faster. So when he became a head coach again in the SEC at Ole Miss, I think that helped him mature faster. I think the fact that his kids are older now helped him mature faster because there's nothing like when your kids pick up the phone and say, hey, daddy, why are you being XXX on this website? Like, why are these things, you know, when your kids can surf and look and they can ask these questions. I've seen former teammates of mine that were terrible human beings, but when their kids got older and their daughters became young women, they changed. So I think Lane is at a point in his life right now where if I were an AD, I would have no problem hiring Lane Kiffin at any institution in America. Now, some institutions will not look at him because they think they're a little high on the pedestal. Okay. And maybe they are, like a Notre Dame. But I do think Lane Kiffin deserves another opportunity at what I would call elite Power Five. He's at Power Five right now. He's going to be in a New Year's Six. But let's be honest, Ole Miss is not elite Power Five. There's probably 10 to 15 schools that qualify for what we would call elite Power Five. And I think he deserves an opportunity at that. Will he get it? I don't know. But if I were running it, I would give him an opportunity because I think when you look at the top play callers in the country, Kev, Lincoln Riley, Ryan Day, the list kind of gets really short before you have to throw Lane Kiffin in there.
No, you're right. There's no doubt about it that he's in the top five. There's no doubt about it. And the more you talk about it, the more it's like, this would make sense. By the way, our boy Taylor did some research. Only one player, a four-star safety, has backed off his commitment for with Notre Dame so far.
Yeah. So, Kev, listen, hey, I grew up, I was a kid from Louisiana who knew about Notre Dame and the gold helmets. I wanted to steal a piece of touchdown Jesus when I went up there. Okay, so understand that. Everybody knows about the Golden Dome. Kev, they think so much of that university, they don't just put any helmets on. Their helmets have gold flakes. You know how much those helmets are worth, Kev? I may steal one the next time I'm up at ESPN because we got them in the cage. I may just take
one. We do got them in the cage.
Yes, I may just take one with me.
They're beautiful. I've taken video and pictures of them because the way that the light hits that, woo, man, that is clean. No doubt about it. We've done a lot about the coaching search. And
one more about the coaching thing. One more. Your interpretation or your feeling coming from your household, Billy Napier to Florida. What was Monica Nagy's gut feeling when she heard that?
So I have been very quiet about the hire because the
you're scared
the
previous, of your wife, but that's okay.
Keep the going. Previous two hires, I sold her on McElwain and Mullen, and I raved about those two hires. And every time those coaches would lose or have a losing streak, it was my fault. And she'd yell at me and say, you told me that these guys were good. And I'd be like, what do you want me to say? What do you want me to do? And the Mullen thing, I think, you know, she met Dan in May at the Dickie V Gala, and Dan was great to our family. And she was like, oh, I'm rooting for him even more. So this season has been really tough on my wife in the household with a lot of questions. I've just said Billy Napier will recruit his butt off. You have no idea how good of a recruiter he is. I think he's going to bring stability to the program. And I said, more than anything else, I'm curious how he's going to handle the expectations. Because if Florida's program is a top 10 program in the country when it comes to expectations. And when you see Georgia as high as it is in the East, that nothing drives Gator fans crazier. They want to beat Bama, but they always feel like no matter what, it's us in Georgia in the East. And when they see teams like Kentucky jump over them on the football side, they're unreasonable. And they say a lot of nasty things towards you, as I've dealt with, like as if I'm Dan Mullen. So I've just keep on telling her he's going to recruit high end players and he's going to bust his butt. And I said, honestly, Monica, this is the one thing that you guys got to do. You got to own the state again when it comes to recruiting. You build that base, you guys will be in good shape. And I think Napier can do that. I also think Napier comes from the Nick Saban understanding, stability, discipline. This is what we're going to do. We're going to do it at levels. We're going to build a foundation. So I brought it up to her. Just give it 2 years. Give it 2 or 3 years. Just understand he's building something. Do you agree?
So what you're saying, yes, I agree. He is a culture builder. He understands, like, nobody left his team, et cetera, et cetera. But the thing I took out of that is you really are afraid of your wife. And it's okay. Most men are, but most men just don't say it as eloquently as you did. You are afraid of your wife, and it's okay, Kev.
I think anybody that's listening to this podcast can understand and relate how passionate we are about our teams, right? When it comes to the Florida Gators.
What does that have to do with you being afraid of Monica?
When it comes to the Florida Gators, there's certain things with my wife where I'm just like, we'll just, you know, I don't need to bring on more heat. I'll just shut up right now because why am I going to bring more attention to this conversation? I don't need to bring any more attention. I will just stand back and let her vent and move on. Because before I try to reason, you can't reason with that stuff, especially something that's passionate. For our listeners, just understand this too. I'm sitting next to Booger on our ABC broadcasts every Saturday. And this season, every single Gator meltdown game was played in front of us. And Booger would send a text to my wife, Monica, or try to FaceTime with her, and she would be irate. There were some cuss words that I think all of us in the studio learned, some new ones, because she just loses her mind and he just eggs her on the entire time, knowing that eventually I'm going home to my wife and I have to hear about it.
I just like to check on her day. Sometimes she's got 3 kids and you leave her at home alone.
Oh, stop. So no.
I just want to check and see how she's doing.
My wife is so maniacal about the Florida Gators. The babysitter comes over for 3 hours so she could go somewhere and watch the game separately from them in the house.
Yeah.
Exactly. That gives you all the information you need to know about passion and understanding how there is there. She puts no doubt the fanatic and fan right there when it comes to the Florida Gators. All right, let's talk about matchups. We've got a handful of phenomenal ones. Let's go down the list. ABC, our schedule, we're working Friday night with the Pac-12 championship and then 3 championship games on Saturday. Starting with Oregon, Utah, buddy, a rematch of what we saw a couple weeks ago, a massacre in Salt Lake City when it comes to the results and how Utah, you know, dominated Oregon in something that Mario Cristobal loves, and that is his identity of physicality. No, the Utes said, we'll show you the next level. Kyle Whittingham doing a phenomenal job. Utah's favored by 3 this game in Vegas here. Just what are your assessments? Can Utah continue to do what they did a couple weeks ago against Oregon?
Yeah, Kev, I think the easiest thing for us to do is just kind of give keys to these 4 championship games. As far as this one here, to me, the key to the game is the first 5 minutes. Because as a player, when I've been dominated, when, like, this is just a rule in general, when you have kicked my behind, the way that Utah beat Oregon, physically curb stomped them, I got to send a message in the first 5 minutes that it's not going to be that way. Like, forget the X's and O's, forget Anthony Brown, forget all this other stuff, I got to hit somebody in the mouth early and then I got to talk some noise. Hey, different day, baby, different day. Okay, not the same. So I think the key is really, really simple. The first 5 minutes of the game, special teams, defense, offense, Oregon has got to let Utah know that it's a different day. If they do that, then we can get into, can Anthony Brown make some throws? Can they do some other things to stop Utah's running game? And can they put pressure on the quarterback? Yeah, we can get to that. But this comes down to, can we show them, can we show the team that bullied us that we're not going to be bullied today, that it's going to be a fight? they do that, it'll be a game. And then it comes down to, can Anthony Brown, does a good Anthony Brown show up that can make some plays throwing the football, or does the bad guy show up? If the bad guy show up, they can't win. If the good guy shows up, they can compete and they can win the Pac-12.
I agree with you 100%. I definitely think it'll be inside 6 points this game. Baylor, Oklahoma State. What's going to be the key here? Oklahoma State favored by 5.5 this game in Arlington. Oklahoma State in a thriller just a couple days ago against Oklahoma. Two teams that play fantastic defense, the opposite of what we've seen from the Big 12 through the years. But I love the identity of both these programs.
Love the identity. They have very familiar with each other. For if you look at Baylor, does Gary Bohannon play? I think that's something that if I'm Dave Aranda, I need to know if he plays or not, because if he does, now it opens up the offense from a dual threat quarterback standpoint. We know they want to run the football and get downhill. Baylor's defense has got to play better. Okay, Oklahoma's defense allows Sanders. Sanders got way too comfortable. I think if Baylor's defense that we think we know shows up all season and Bohannon plays, I think that Baylor wins the Big 12 against Oklahoma State. I go with the team. I'm of the belief now. I'm going to always go with the team with the better defense. Just like in Bedlam, Oklahoma State's defense was able to make a stop when they needed to. It wasn't perfect, but they made a stop when they needed to. So I like Baylor in this matchup, especially if their quarterback, Gary Bohannon, plays.
And Sanders has got to play better as well. They played earlier this season, and Oklahoma State won by 10. Sanders in that game threw three picks. Jaylen Warren was the storyline. I mean, they gave him the ball 36 times. He had a couple of touchdowns over 100 yards in that contest. Honestly, too, I kind of want to see how Oklahoma State responds off the emotions of finally beating Oklahoma. Yeah. And now you have the opportunity to get in the playoff. How are you going to handle that adversity in the beginning if Baylor gets a score in front of you, right? Mm-hmm. Are you going to try to do too much, or are you just going to make sure you play your style and your identity? I'm looking forward to seeing how Oklahoma State responds to that, because you and I watched the emotions for Oklahoma State as well as the emotions for Michigan as that game and both those games are going on. They want to win, but they also want to mentally get over this hurdle. And you're going to hear this all week for our next matchup, and that is Georgia and Alabama. If Georgia can't beat Alabama, if Kirby cannot beat Nick Saban now, you love that phrase, that Tom Jackson phrase, because I don't know when they're going to be able to do it, because now is the time when you look at the rosters. It's just the mental thing. Can you get over the hump, especially in Atlanta facing Alabama?
There's only one way Georgia loses this game, and that is if the mailman, Stetson Bennett, wets the bed, because he touches the ball every single play. So if the quarterback melts down, throws a pick six, throws a couple interceptions, Bryce Young, I think Bryce Young's the best quarterback in the country. I think Bryce Young and Bill O'Brien, the offensive coordinator for Notre Dame, are going to try to prove a point against the best defense that everybody says in the last 10 years. But Georgia's defense has got 10 or 11 pros on it. I don't see any way Bama can score 17 points, Kev. I just don't. And if that's the case, then, Georgia's got to run the football. We've seen teams put up points against Alabama. The only way Georgia loses this game is if Stetson Bennett does not do what he's done, which is just be a game manager. If he tries to be the hero and throw some uncharacteristic interceptions, then Bama can win. But other than that, I think Georgia wins, and I think they win quite comfortably, Kev. I think this is a 10-point game for Georgia by the time we get to the fourth quarter.
You know what Nick's loving, though, coming into a game like this? Hey, no one's
being
talking
the underdog.
Us. Yes, no one's talking about us, right? It's just weird to see Bama that they can't run the football. It's just really, really, I know they've been beat up, that offensive line. This is the attrition, of course, when you lose so many players to the NFL over time and the turnover rate. It's very weird to see, but you're right. Quarterback play will play the biggest role in a game like this in the outcome. And Stetson Bennett hasn't been challenged. And how is he going to handle some adversity, especially that Bama defense? I'm really curious to see who steps up when they need a big play, because Will Anderson's phenomenal. We don't talk about him enough because he's a defensive player. Georgia will get all the press because as a unit, they're the best defense, but the best defensive player is wearing crimson in Atlanta, and that is, of course, Will Anderson. So,
Will Anderson is good now. Let's not forget about the big man wearing 99.
I love him. I love Jordan Davis.
Let's not forget about that now.
I'm just talking about, like, just like you say, Bryce Young's the best quarterback on the field.
Yeah.
I think Will Anderson's the best defensive player on the field, but the best units are Georgia's offense and Georgia's defense.
Yep. I got you.
Buying that?
Yep.
All right. Keys here for Cincinnati against Houston. Especially with Houston's defense, that game at Nippert, the place is going to be wild. Your thoughts about a game that Cincinnati has to win?
Well, the reason Houston is 11-1, like Toon has been outstanding at quarterback, and I think that the I think they lost their first game, they've won 11 in a row, and so for him, if you're Luke Fickell, you're Cincinnati. You have to impose your style of football. Houston doesn't want to necessarily play a physical brand of football. They want to kind of spread you out and do their thing. So if I'm Cincinnati, let's impose our will. Let's get forward running downhill. Let's use Desmond Ridder's legs. Let's get some quarterback run going, and then let's create chaos and get 2 to 3 turnovers from a defensive standpoint. I think Cincinnati's defense has to be the catalyst against Toon and this offense, because if they allow Houston to get rolling, to get this thing going, now they develop confidence. And make no mistake about it, Cincinnati is coming into this game saying, we're the underdog. Houston is saying, we're the underdog. No one is expecting us to win. We can go out and we can spoil the fun known as the Cincinnati coronation to the playoff. So that you're going to have extra motivation from Houston. But I think this is a point where Ridder and Ford and Luke Fickell have to say, hey, everything we want is in front of us. And we just have to go out and play our brand of football to do it. I think this has to be Luke Fickell's best coaching job. Not last year against Georgia in the Peach Bowl, but this game has to be his best coaching job because so much is riding on it, and we're almost to the finish line.
Can't wait to see just how they respond. And that flows into the next conversation. I just want to see what Michigan does. You won. You finally got the monkey off your back. And that all the conversation of Ohio State, and we're watching that game, and I'm hearing you are in love with the entire football style of Michigan, with their defense in the ends, as well as their running the football, bully football the entire time. Now they're facing a team that I was pretty physical on the line, You get off the emotional high, and now you got to get ready and face a team that's going to punch you back, and that is the Hawkeyes. Your thoughts, the keys for Michigan this weekend?
Yeah, stop Goodson. Don't allow him to even remotely get going, and just play Michigan football, play bully ball, continue to do what you did against Ohio State. And to me, that's how you get it done. That's how you go about doing it. Run the football, okay? Come downhill. Michigan is at a point right now where I don't think Coach Harbaugh is going to let it happen. Don't allow this game to turn to McNamara. Don't allow that. Continue to allow this game to go downhill, run the football, allow Haskins and Corm to come downhill, and just be physical, man. Play Michigan football. Michigan's the better team. And if you're the better team, then go out and play better. To me, that's how they get it done.
Okay. And our last one. Defenses will probably look away when you look at the two quarterbacks, and that is Pitt, Wake Forest, and Charlotte. Pitt favored by 3. I haven't even looked at the over-under, but it should be 80 at least, considering how both these quarterbacks like to sling it. Your thoughts about Pickett and Hartman in this battle?
I'm going to go again with the team that I think's got the better defense. I think Pitt's defense is better. I think when you look at Kenny Pickett, he's playing at a high level. Some people think he's going to be a first-round pick. Nothing against Wake Forest, but I saw North Carolina put 50-something on him. Mm-hmm. I've seen Wake Forest give up a lot of points, man. I'm going to lean toward Kenny Pickett. I love Dave Clawson and what they do at Wake Forest, and this is a great feat for them to be playing for an ACC title. But, yeah, this is Pat Narduzzi, their defense. They'll make enough plays, and I think Kenny Pickett he's been there 12 years. He'll finally get his ACC championship.
Hey, by the way, the line is 72.5, and I would just take the over just because. And you bring up a great point about Wake Forest. They have a phenomenal start, and then they kind of sputter a little bit. Where are they? Like, what happened? Narduzzi's done a really good job. Like, he's kind of been overlooked when it comes to conversations of fantastic coaches this season. And we always rave about Clawson. So two good coaches. and they get the opportunity, one of them, to say they're ACC champs and cap off a fantastic season. All right, Boog, it's been fun. No DEF CON. We don't need to do that because we're in championship mode now. And I think we're feeling good and we're going to be positive on this podcast. All right, Boog, be well.
I love it. Hey, great podcast. Two things to take away from this podcast. If somebody offers you $100 million, I don't care where it's at in America, take the $100 million. And always remember, Kev is afraid of his wife. Have a great day.
Happily married. There's a reason. See you, Boog.
Later.
And don't be fooled here by Booger McFarland. Booger is scared of Tammy, his fantastic and beautiful wife as well, as Taylor is of his wife. All of us are. We're just smart men. We understand. But the Florida Gators situation, I just hope that the Gators win each and every Saturday. Happy wife, happy life in the household at the Nagandis. I will just simply state that. Big thanks to Booger, of course, as well as Taylor Schwenk on the other side. And we will be back tomorrow with our picks. Cannot wait to have Joey Galloway on the podcast. And we will talk about his sudden breakdown of the season as he is now trailing me in our picks. Cannot wait for that. That'll be a fun Thursday podcast. We will talk to you then.